Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In the first hour of the show today, we'll talk about some of the most pressing issues facing the state of Illinois today, concentrating primarily on issues that have to do with budget and the economy and employment. And our guests here this morning are two economists from the University of Illinois, Fred Gertz and Jeffrey Hewings. They are both associated with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, and both have contributed to a report that came out earlier this year, the Illinois Report 2007, looking at a variety of issues, including the budget, environment, the economy, education, and others. A number of people here have contributed to this, and they are among them. Just a little bit more about our guests. Fred Gertz has been on the faculty of the Institute and also the U of I since 1980. He's professor of economics. He compiles the U of I Flash Index, which is a monthly indicator of the Illinois economy. And Jeff Hewings is professor of economics. He's also been on the faculty of the U of I since 1974 and joined the Institute of Government and Public Affairs in 2005. He also has appointments in the departments of geography, economics, and urban and regional planning. And I'm pleased they could be here and spend some time with us. By the way, if you're interested in reading the report, the Illinois Report 2007, you can read it on the website of the Institute. So you can go there, and I'm sure from them you can also get a hard copy if you would like to read it that way. Questions here on the program are welcome, too. I know the guests will do their best to respond. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you're certainly welcome to call. The only thing we ask of callers is that people just try to be brief so that we can keep moving and get in as many people as possible, but anyone's welcome to call. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. I'd like to begin by having you maybe make some general comments about the about where things stand here with the Illinois economy. We've certainly, Fred Gertz has been here on the program to talk about this before. And I guess the place to start out is by talking about after being hit by recession, just like a lot of other states back in 2001, we had some very difficult years, a couple of very difficult years. Things are better. But one also has to look at Illinois relative to the nation, and one, I guess, could say that we could be doing better. We are doing better, but we could be doing even better. Give us a kind of a general sense of where we are. Okay.
Let me talk about a general overview, and Jeff will probably give more details here in just a second.
Sure.
I've talked about it in terms of the comparison frame. If you compare us to where we were 3 or 4 years ago, Illinois is doing better, as is the national economy. We're in an expansion. The expansion began in late 2001, and expansions the last 20 or 30 years have usually lasted about 10 years. So in a sense, we're moving forward. We're better off than we were, and we probably can look forward to several more years of expansion. So compared to a few years ago, we're better off. But the troubling comparison is, how are we doing compared to other states? And the fact is, Illinois is not keeping pace with other states. We're losing our margin of superiority. It used to be 30 years ago, we were 13, 14, 15% above the national average in per capita income. That's fallen now to about 4 or 5%. So we're still growing. We're still moving, but not really keeping pace with the rest of the country. And that's the question that we're interested in. And we know some of the answers, but not all the answers.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, David. I think the real issue is not that we're growing, but how fast we're growing. Mm-hmm. And last year, 2006, we actually did do a lot better than we have done in the last 4 or 5 years. But the real problem is that we are still something of the order of 100,000 jobs below our peak of November 2000. And between November 2000 and the current month, we have expanded our population and expanded our labor force. So if you add that component to it, we need about 200,000 jobs just to get back to where we were in November 2000. If we look at our recovery, the U.S. economy as a whole recovered its prior peak almost 2 years ago. And we forecast that Illinois is going to take another 18 or 19 months. So from peak of November 2000 to the time we recover, it will be about 8 years in total.
Well, you know, I think that you would argue, and I'm sure that other people would argue, that Illinois has some natural advantages. So there are things in it, and when you talk about potential for economic growth, that Illinois has a number of things in its favor. So that makes it difficult to answer this question, well, why is it that Illinois is lagging behind? There are some explanations have been offered. Some of them are here in the report. But I think that you're feeling that they're kind of unsatisfying. They don't really explain very well why it is that the state of Illinois is not doing better.
Right. There's some things that are probably not true. I mean, it would be easy to say, well, we have bad government policy, our taxes are too high, and so on. And we may have less than ideal government policies, and we may have taxes that aren't perfect. But compared to other states, I don't think they're necessarily the explanation for our underperformance. And then you can give some anecdotal sort of explanations. Well, 9/11 hurt us more than everyone else because we had a big concentration in transportation, United and American being in Chicago, or that Arthur Andersen closed and hurt us because of the Enron scandal, things of that sort. But those are all important. They all contribute, but they don't tell the whole story. And I think we probably don't know the whole story. And Jeff also has a story to tell about how we're like the rest of the country, but yet we're not performing as well as the rest of the country.
Yeah, I think David, there are a number of issues here. First, this is not a function of the current administration's policies. If you go back, and we did to benchmark everything at 1990, we have consistently grown slower than the U.S. And until this last year, slower than the rest of the Midwest. So this is not a Democratic or a Republican administration problem. It's something that seems to be endemic in our economy. The one issue that I think is a real concern is when you look at our trade, most people think of trade in terms of international trade. But our largest trading partners are our Midwestern neighbors. And 40% of our exports go to Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. And last year, Illinois actually grew more rapidly than all of those states together. In fact, we added 16% more jobs than all of those states. Now, while that is good news for Illinois, the bad news is that the part of the country that absorbs a lot of our exports is growing very, very slowly. And in fact, over the next year or two, is probably likely to grow even less rapidly as a result of the downturn in the automobile sector. So that the concerns that we have is that our markets are not expanding, and I think that is having a very, very dampening effect on our economy.
Hmm. Well, just not to press this point too much, but if someone came to you, if it was the governor, if it was someone in the legislature, if it was someone who represented manufacturing or business interests, and said to you, "Well, I see now that you've spent some time studying the economy and trying to figure out what's going on with this. If I ask this question, what should we here in the state of Illinois be doing to try to create jobs, to stimulate the economy, to see if we can bump up the growth rate? Is there anything that you could suggest, or do we just have to say, well, we don't really have a very good answer for you?"
Well, I think we know the long-run answer, but the long-run answer is not very satisfying to politicians. They don't want to wait 10 or 20 years for the payoff. They're more interested in cutting the ribbon at the new factory or the new installation. So the basic story is that to promote growth, you need to have good basic services at a reasonable and steady tax level. So having a tax base which is productive but also stable and predictable, and then investing in the kind of things that help economic growth, such as infrastructure, education, things of that sort, are very important. But none of those is going to pay off in the short term, and it's not as dramatic as attracting, which we didn't do, the Honda plant to Fithian. And the problem with this sort of the big score kind of mentality, where you want to attract a plant or something of that sort, is that if you're talking about the magnitude of job loss or the gain we'd like to have that Jeff has been talking about, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of jobs that we need. Fithian and Honda was in the neighborhood of 2,000 new jobs, which we unfortunately didn't get. But you're talking about 100 plants like that in Illinois, and we don't even get one a year like that. So we have to figure out ways to make the whole economy more productive. It's sometimes called a process of creation and destruction. Some firms grow, others decline. We just hope that we have the environment where it will be conducive for firms to grow.
I think Fred alluded to this a few minutes ago, David, but if you think about the state as a portfolio in which you would want to invest, one of the things that you would look at is what does a portfolio look like that is growing very rapidly, and that is the U.S. economy. And when you look at our profile in terms of our employment structure on a sector-by-sector basis, we are a sister to the U.S. There isn't one sector that's more than a half or 1% difference. So we have the right profile, but that portfolio is underperforming the U.S. And the real question is, why is this the case? And I think the conclusion that we've come to is we just don't know. There is not information out there that we can access and analyze. And the sort of thing that the business community would respond, it's because we have high taxes, we are not a good place to do business, to expand and grow a business. But I think there are a lot of other reasons. Is our labor or capital as productive as elsewhere in the country? I've alluded to the fact that we are serving markets that themselves are not growing. Do we have older factories that are not as productive? But I think there's another problem here is I think we're producing goods which probably are not as attractive to consumers. We're not producing a lot of stuff in our manufacturing sector which is cutting edge in terms of its appeal to consumers. So as a result, our activities are probably not growing. Well, that's the manufacturing. But what about non-manufacturing? We would expect, given our competitive position in financial markets, for example, that that sector would be doing well. Mm. But if we divide the economy into 10 sectors, not one of our sectors has grown more rapidly than the U.S. over the last 17 years and certainly not in the last 4 or 5 years. So it's a real enigma.
We're talking this morning about the Illinois economy. We have two guests, Fred Gertz. He's professor of economics at the U of I. Jeff Ewings is professor and has joint appointments in geography, economics, urban and regional planning. And both of them are on the faculty of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And both contributed to the report that I mentioned at the beginning of the show. It came out a couple of months ago, the Illinois Report 2007, looking at a variety of issues, and among them things like economy, budget, and employment. And as I said, you can get a copy from them. You can look at it on their website. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We do have a caller here to bring into the conversation, someone in Sullivan, and this is line 4, the toll-free line. Hello.
Yes. The only thing I really don't care about Illinois is the tax structure, because I also farm in Indiana. But anyway, there's one tax I think you folks might be overlooking, which would be nationwide or worldwide, and that is like when I buy a share of stock, a New York Stock Exchange or something like that, there's always a transaction tax, you know, like 100 shares might be, you know, $20 or $100, or it's never 100, but we'll say, you know, like $20, $25. And if you would put that on the Board of Trade, every transaction, just think of the cash could roll in to the state coffers that would help education and maybe would spur industry settling in Illinois. That's all I have to say, sir.
Oh, all right. You want to comment on that?
Well, the one thing that's difficult to do is to tax mobile capital. There's nothing more mobile than a stock exchange. So it seems as if it's a static situation. It's there, you tax and you get the money. The fact is that you can move shares around, move trading around very easily, as they found in New York and some things moving to New Jersey, things of that sort. So unfortunately, that's not really a very productive source of revenue.
Let me, at this point, I suppose, since the caller raised the issue of a tax, some kind of a new tax, one of the things that I wanted to get to sooner or later here was some of the proposals that the governor made when he gave his budget speech a couple of weeks ago. One of the things that he proposed, and what's notable, the big headlines on the governor's speech and his budget proposals were that no governor has ever attempted to raise as much money in such a short a time as he is proposing here to do. And he's talking about doing a number of things, selling some bonds, leasing the state lottery. One of the things that certainly got a lot of attention, particularly from people in the business community, was the gross receipts tax. And what he is proposing, that service businesses pay a tax on their revenues, 1.8%, that other businesses, including manufacturing and construction, they pay a half of 1%. If you're under $1 million revenue, you're exempt. And as one would expect, the business community is not particularly high on this. What I guess I wonder what sort of effect you think this would have on the economy. You want to say this is good, bad, or otherwise?
Well, there are two questions. The first question is, how much money do we need? And the second question is, given that we need a certain amount of money, how should we generate that extra money? the first question about how much we need, it's kind of an odd situation in regard to the governor. We've gone 4 years, and he's been basically saying we don't need any extra money. We have done a lot of innovative things and saved money and so on, and therefore the state's in good shape. And so the first 4 years, he rejected any possible increase in the income tax or the sales tax, even though we did really have a dire situation, even though we did have underfunding of pensions and so on. And they managed that first 4 years by a lot of expedients, such as reducing pension contributions, borrowing money, not paying their bills on time, things of that sort. So after 4 years of saying, don't worry, we have things under control, then all of a sudden we're hit after the election with the clearly the largest increase in taxes in Illinois since 1969 and possibly the largest ever. And now there's a story today about, is this the largest in the country in the last 20 or 30 years? And some people say yes, some people say no. But we're going from basically underfunding state government, not recognizing the problem, to what may very well be an overreaction with a huge increase in the size of government, $6 or $7 billion gross receipts tax plus money from other sources as well. So that's the first question. So I think we do need something, but do we need that big an increase? And I think that's an open question. I would probably doubt that we need that size of an increase. The second question then is, how should we raise that money? And the governor has basically painted the state of Illinois and himself into a corner by rejecting the two best sources of tax revenue. One would be to deal with the sales tax. The other would be to modify the income tax, which are the bread and butter taxes in the state of Illinois. He has ruled those out by saying those, in fact, are taxes on people, and he doesn't want to tax people. He wants to tax something other than people, which he assumes is business. So he has then gone to the gross receipts tax, which really is a very, very big increase. And by his calculations, the gross receipts tax is not paid by people, even though I think every economist and every person knows that eventually it will be paid by people. Every tax is paid by people. So he's saying that if you pay the sales tax, go to the store and buy something, and the store collects the money and sends it to the state, that's a tax on people. If you go to the store and buy the same thing and they collect the money and send it to the state under a gross receipts tax, that's a tax on business. So the dichotomy between business and individuals really is totally irrelevant here, or faulty. But the fact is, and he's ruled out the two tried and true ways of raising revenue and gone to this third way, which is a very unusual and most people's opinion, a very inferior way of raising revenue, which is the gross receipts tax.
Mm. What is there some way to say what ultimately, as you say, he's talking about this being a tax on business, but what the business community says and what you have said is, well, ultimately that it's going to come back to being a tax on people. So, maybe this is the wrong kind of question, but what sort of impact would this have on businesses in Illinois? And if we're concerned about economic growth, is this something that is actually likely to work one way or another, work against that?
Well, there are clearly better ways, so it's not the best way, and maybe it could be the worst way of raising revenue. The gross receipts tax is not like a sales tax where you pay it one time. A gross receipts tax is levied time and time again through the production process. So every stage of production, a tax is levied on a sale from one firm to another, not just on the value added, but on the full value of that sale. And you find then the tax is being levied on the same thing again and again and again, which results in kind of a pyramiding effect. And there's some inefficiencies where if a firm carries out things internally, they don't pay the tax. For example, if you have a large firm that has its own internal accountants and lawyers and janitors, they don't pay the tax. If you have a smaller firm that buys janitorial services or legal services, they do pay the tax on that. So it's unfair in that regard. It's also more or less random. And then finally, the impact is very regressive. It ends up being very much like a sales tax where lower-income people tend to pay more than higher-income people. So it doesn't really achieve the goal that the governor sets for himself, which is not to tax people. In fact, it taxes people and probably taxes the wrong group of people, at least in a disproportionate way.
Mm. I think, David, the issue is, as Fred described, I think it's very, very complex. And I think part of the problem is that our tax structure, which was revised in the late 60s, early 70s, was revised at a time when manufacturing was 30% of our gross state product. It's now 12%. And the problem is that tax structure is still reflecting an economy which no longer exists. So there's no doubt that I think we need to rethink how we're going to raise revenue. The problem is, I think, that what happens with a lot of administrations is they throw out ideas. And I think if the governor is thinking of this sort of dramatic overhaul, it might have been better to have convened a group of folks from the business community, from the political parties, and from academics, and basically evaluate a number of options in the hope that you could get not only a bipartisan degree of support for this, but also some buy-in from the business community. I think as a result of this proposal, there's already a very defensive posture that's being put up by the governor's office. There's a very aggressive against the tax policy being promoted by the business community. And I think under that environment, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to get a meaningful dialogue when people have already cast themselves very firmly on one side of the issue or the other. But I think the concern that I have is to what degree are businesses that own establishments in other parts of the country going to decide that it will be more profitable for them to deflect that business elsewhere. And this is one of the sources of concern that a lot of us have, that this may result in our growing even less rapidly as a result of this. Because clearly, if you have an option to pay less somewhere else, then I think you would be a very rational person to do that.
Well, I have a number of callers here. I promise these folks that we'll get right to them in a minute. Let me ask one other question. We talked about what happened with the recession of 2001 and the fact that while things have improved, that we still lag behind the nation and other states. The criticism, I think, that has been made of the way the government responded to the recession and to the accompanying drop in revenues was that revenues went down, but we didn't cut spending. At least we didn't cut it enough. And that we could say that now, even though things have improved on the revenue side, still the last 2 years, according to the comptroller, we're still running deficits here in the state of Illinois. So obviously there's an issue. We do need to generate more revenue. We at least ought to get the budget into balance. But Fred said, well, maybe we don't need to be raising as much money so fast as the governor is proposing doing it. What if we were simply going to balance the budget, what sort of revenue increase would we have to have?
We probably need a $2 or $3 billion increase because of the backlog of bills, the underfunding of the pensions, things of that sort. And that could be done with some fiscal discipline in terms of not spending as much, and then the other would be some modest increases. I suggested 3 or 4 years ago to have a small tax increase in 2003, accompany that with some discipline on the spending side and try to get back in shape and let the economy grow. We ended up putting things off. We kept spending more money. We didn't raise any more in terms of taxes, and the problem got greater for a couple of years. Now it's getting a little bit better because of the growth of the economy, but it's still a problem. But now you have a situation where a new firm coming to Illinois is basically buying into the backlog of pension underfunding, things of that sort. So a new firm coming here knows that in the future they're going to have to pay for some of these past deficiencies we had. So, again, I'm not opposed to a tax increase. But again, I think we have to look at the size of the tax increase, and also it should be done in the most efficient way possible. It's kind of an odd situation. I teach public finance, which is about taxes and government spending, and the only place the gross receipts tax is ever mentioned is as a bad tax, and then you talk about how you would do it better. So you start out with a turnover tax or a gross receipts tax and show why it's so inferior, and then you go on to talk about, well, a sales tax or a value-added tax is a way to accomplish the same goal in a more effective way. So it's not just a random occurrence. Almost no other state in the country has a gross receipts tax. There are only just a handful of states, and several of those actually have gotten rid of their gross receipts tax. So we're going down a route not of innovation, but of sort of going backwards in time in terms of an inferior tax.
All right. Well, let's talk with some of the people who are listening here. We'll take them in line, starting with Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was listening to your program, and I wonder if maybe you need to have a more big picture outlook in terms of how the global economy is affecting and will affect not only Illinois but the United States. My husband works for a firm that was started here locally. The owner was from China. He grew his business here. He bought out a competitor. He owns two factories in Japan where all the products are made. you know, he makes a lot of money. I don't know how the taxes work in a situation like that, but he lives in California, and then there are two operates. And, you know, that's the way the world is headed. And you have to take that into consideration.
Well, but you want to comment on it?
That's a good observation, and I think that sometimes we become too narrowly focused, thinking that our success or failure is going to be determined by what we do in Springfield or how smart our governor is or how smart our General Assembly is. The fact is that most of the economy performance is going to be dictated by this nuts and bolts kind of thing, some firms succeeding, other firms not. And the way to succeed is not to replicate what we've done in the past, is to move forward and do things in an innovative way in the future. But unfortunately, I don't know, and I don't think Jeff knows exactly what that route is going to be, and neither does the governor, neither does the General Assembly. So we have to leave it to individual firms to innovate and to try to be creative and hope they are successful. So the best we can do is to try to establish an environment where that can take place. We can't really do a roadmap for people because we don't know where the road leads.
Yeah, I think
all the money that has been spent on the war in Iraq could have been funneled into the United States to provide growth.
Well, again, the war is a different issue. It's lots of money, but that's very, very small compared to the size of the economy. So I think the war should be judged on its own merits, not on how much it costs. I mean, again, people have different opinions, but the cost, I think, is probably a secondary issue here.
I think that your point is an important one, and we're seeing this process that Lou Dobbs has popularized called outsourcing is occurring at a variety of levels, and not just in our own state, that we are losing a lot of jobs to other parts of the country and in some cases to places like Mexico, but increasingly to South Asia, Indonesia, Malaysia, and to China. And it is very hard for us to compete given the pricing structure that we have for our labor, the cost of capital. But there are things that we still do have a competitive advantage. And those are activities which require a great deal of very high-skilled labor. And this goes back to another problem with our state is when we have these enormous unfunded obligations in the pension system, this is tying up a lot of money that perhaps really should be going to education to help train and retrain our labor force. And the problem is that when we have limited flexibility, those are the sorts of things that tend to get cut. And the problem is that over the next 5 to 10 years, those are the things that are going to come back and haunt us. Mm.
We're just a little bit past our midpoint here. I hope the caller will forgive me because the lines are full, and I want to get on to some other callers and just very quickly introduce again our guest, the last person you heard speak, Jeffrey Hewings. He's professor of geography, economics, urban and regional planning here at University of Illinois. Also with us is Fred Gertz. He's professor of economics, both of them attached to the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and both of them contributed to this report that I've mentioned that was released a little earlier this year, the Illinois Report for 2007, looking at various issues, a lot of them having to do with the economy and the budget. You can take a look at it on the website of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. Questions here are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The next caller I believe we have is Champagne, line 4. Let's go there. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question, I guess, has to do with job creation and economic growth. You know, I've read recently a number of articles talking about, for example, Chicago's incredibly diversified, or I guess most diversified, metropolitan economy in the U.S. and various aspects of that. Do you think the onus for job creation is again going to rest on Chicago and the metropolitan area, or downstate, for example, you know, in smaller developments? For example, I lived in Quincy, Illinois for a while, and quietly that area has been adding a number of jobs over the years. Certainly we've seen that Champaign is growing. I'll hang up and listen to your answers. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay. That's an interesting perspective. I think a lot of people look at Chicago in a very schizophrenic way. On the one hand, they find that it's a very, very large and dominant position in the economy. But clearly, it is very, very important and does certainly generate a lot of growth for the economy. About half of our jobs are created in the Chicago region. But I think the other perspective is that, in similar to the state, even though we have a very diversified structure, that structure is not rewarding us in terms of growth rates which match those on a sector-by-sector basis with the nation. The second perspective is that downstate, we have done pretty well, but our growth rate over the last 12 months was slightly lower than the rest of the economy. And one of the things that we noted is that on a year-to-year basis, the league table of growth rates in the metropolitan areas in Illinois jumps around very significantly, so that Bloomington Normal was number one in 2005 and dropped to the bottom in 2006. Metro East, the eastern Illinois part of the St. Louis metropolitan area, is usually ranked eighth or ninth. But the other communities jump around quite a lot. And if we look at their economic profiles, there's not a lot to be encouraged about because they are still very heavily dominant, a lot of them like Peoria and Rockford, by manufacturing. And as the first caller indicated, that's probably the one sector that is likely to erode even more rapidly. If we look at the state as a whole, since 1990, we've lost 240,000 jobs in the manufacturing sector. So the prospects for any form of growth in that sector are pretty dim.
Let's continue. We'll go to Champaign County. This is line three. Hello.
Hi. I wanted to highlight an article by a Scott Reeder who writes for a small newspaper group. He wrote it in advance of the State of the Union address, but it has some amazing statistics, and he relies on the governor's statistics and the Citizens for Tax Justice labor-supported economic analysis, but it's absolutely astonishing figures. One of the lines that was not commented much on the State of the Union address is the corporate tax doesn't work anymore. 48% of corporations in this country that have sales more than $50 million don't pay any corporate tax. There's an overall trend in the country where in Illinois in the 70s, 20% of the tax burden was paid by corporations directly, and it's now down to 12%. Of the Fortune 100, the biggest corporations in the country, 99 of them file in Illinois, and only 37 of them, 37% roughly, didn't pay any corporate tax, income tax at all. So I'm more inclined to a value-added tax, and gross receipts just sounds like an obnoxious thing to have to sell just on the face of it, right? But if the corporate income tax isn't working, then we have a problem. And this argument that we hear all the time about how corporate taxes just get passed on to consumers is not entirely true. There's a whole other class of people that rely on corporations and get money out of them, and that's called the stockholders. And if competition really works in this society, then they might just have to accept a little less profit, and that would be where the taxes would be absorbed from, and the natural market efforts would mean that there would be competition enough that the prices couldn't rise the way everyone suggests that they automatically do, that the corporations always just pass it through. So I really do commend people's attention. It's called The State of the State Preview by Scott Reeder, R-E-E-D-E-R. It's just packed with figures that are just like the ones I gave you, which are just totally astonishing, it seems to me. When Boeing signs its contracts flying over the ocean so they don't have to pay any corporate taxes, the high seas loophole or something it's called, and they haven't paid any corporate tax. The city of Chicago spends $63 million subsidized their moving, and they're not paying into the tax system. It's astonishing. Thanks for letting me go on so long.
All right. Well, again, you guys want to comment?
Well, there is, in fact, an erosion of the corporate tax. In Illinois, we collect about $1.2 billion, maybe $1.5 billion in good years in the corporate tax. And if we could get it perfect and get at some of the problems that we're talking about, we might be able to increase that by a few hundred million dollars. So we're talking about maybe $300 or $400 billion of extra tax revenue to extract from corporations. But we're talking, the government's talking about $6 billion, which is probably 10 or 20 times that amount. So it's not just a matter of taking it with the corporate tax. The corporate tax, there are reasons, and maybe we don't need to go into great detail, but there are other forms now. Businesses have ways of operating aside from corporations, limited liability operations, things of that sort. They also are much more adept at moving things around to avoid taxes, things of that sort. So there clearly has been the erosion, but this is not just a replacement of a few hundred million dollars. It's a replacement of an addition of $6 or $7 billion.
I don't know, Jeff. Do you want to? And let me. I don't know if that's. Have we gotten at your point, caller?
Well, not very well. I wonder whether this annual survey actually tracks the share of the corporate and individual taxes. If in the 70s, 20% of the state budget was, and now it's 12. That means 8% of the state budget has been. So I would dare say that it should be more than the lowball figure of whatever. Less than a third of a billion, it seems like. And if, as I say, 37 of the Fortune 500 companies don't pay any corporate tax at all in this state. It's and that was a line. Like I say, I'm no Rod fan particularly, but if the corporate tax isn't working, we need to have another method. And if you just sales tax is more aggressive than anything that you've suggested so far, and if indeed it just gets passed along, it's just like a sales tax. So I don't know why you would oppose value added or gross receipts. Obviously, I don't know. I just commend people's attention. And Citizens for Tax Justice has some information on this line too. It's an outrageous. Thing that the governor can actually get up and say that many corporations aren't paying any taxes, and we just get an analysis that is so quote unquote business friendly that I'm yammering on here. I hope someone else takes up the point. Thank you.
All right. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Two guests, Fred Gertz, he's professor of economics at the U of I, and Jeffrey Hewings, he's professor of economics, also geography and urban and regional planning, and they're both on the faculty of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. We're talking about the Illinois economy. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. A point I'd just like to go back to for a second, because we were talking about we're talking about job creation. We're talking about stimulating the economy. Earlier, Fred talked about the fact that there was this – Illinois was in the running for a car plant, for a Honda assembly plant, and they went with Indiana. And that would have been a couple of thousand jobs at least. I guess I'm thinking about the fact that we talk so much about how the economy has changed and we have moved away from a kind of a manufacturing economy. And yet at the same time, it seems that we pay an awful lot of attention, and that a story like that – gets a lot of attention. Does that say that we're still thinking in we're thinking in old ways about what the economy is, and so we're we maybe spend a lot of time thinking and talking about how we might get a car plant, but that somehow we should be thinking about moving in other directions?
Yeah, the way we're going to succeed is not to replicate what we did in 1950 or 1960, is to figure out ways to do things that are more competitive and the high-value kind of activities that Jeff has talked about. The allure of something like a car plant is it would bring jobs in and provide jobs for people who probably are not going to be very successful in this new economy. But again, it's sort of backward-looking rather than forward-looking. We're not going to be able to recreate the past. And even if we did, it's not the right direction to go. We have to go forward, figure out ways to produce high-value goods and services, not to compete with Japan or not even Japan anymore, but China and Southeast Asia. Those are not the jobs we want. We want the jobs that are going to be high-paying and move us forward, not to keep us where we were a few years ago.
Yeah, I think the one issue here is that, for example, in the automobile sector, it's estimated that the world has about 25% excess capacity. Mm-hmm. And the question then becomes, do we really want to attract an industry into an activity which is already incredibly competitive? And we look at the amount of money that was spent attracting the Diamond Star Mitsubishi plant to Bloomington Normal. It is now operating at about half of its capacity, and that's part of the problem. If things go well and they are sustained, it does certainly help. But I think there is an issue here is should the state be in the business of what is referred to pejoratively as smokestack chasing, or should they be trying to provide incentives which attract firms and not pay them directly? And I think the previous callers drew our attention to the fact that over $60 million was used to attract the Boeing headquarters here, creating probably locally 200 jobs, and I think 200 jobs moved from Seattle. And I think that if you looked at this from a benefit-cost perspective, it would probably be very, very hard to justify that level of expenditure.
I want to ask about something else that you write about in the report, and that is when you try to project out in the future, you can make projections about what we think over the coming decades revenue is going to be like. We are expecting the revenue should increase, but we also have an idea at least about some of our obligations or what they're going to be. And there are things like the pensions, and we can think about how much we're going to have to be spending on things like Medicare and Medicaid and all those sorts of things. Your sort of argument is that if you take a look at what we're looking at revenue, and you also take a look at what we're looking at in terms of expenditure, that if we do nothing, the budget's never going to come into balance. You're expecting a kind of a deficit that should go on virtually as far as you
right.
can see.
Yeah, there's something called a structural deficit where you sort of say, where are we now and how would you project if we keep the programs the same, maintain the same level of services, and keep our same tax structure, what's going to happen in the future? Well, the fact is that our taxes are not particularly fast growing. The sales tax keeps up with income. The income tax basically keeps up with income. But most of our other taxes don't really keep up with income. They grow at a slower pace. So we have our revenues growing maybe at 2 or 3% a year. And then we look at expenditures. Well, we know that medical care is going to go up for two reasons. One, the price of medical care is going up. And secondly, we have more people being served, more aged people, program expansion, things of that sort. Schools, education costs have tended to go up faster than the average. So we have a kind of path of expenditures, which is maybe at 4 or 5%, a path of revenues at 3%, and that's going to continue to grow. Now, there are two ways to deal with that. One is to find ways to cut the rate of growth, to cut back on programs. But if we don't want to do that, then we have to find a way to get more revenue. And there are two ways to do that. One is to find a tax source that's more elastic, that grows faster, which would be possibly using taxing of services under the sales tax, things of that sort. And the other would be to have a periodic, occasionally, a tax increase to cut this deficit. So it's not a very pleasant picture. The fact is that deficit is not going to occur. We're not going to end up with $10 to $20 billion deficits 20 years from now, because that's simply not going to happen. We're going to have to make some changes, and the changes are, again, very easy answer. The answer to almost all economic problems: you find more revenue, you find ways to cut back your expenditures.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have talked a little bit about what the governor has proposed. We talked about this business tax, the gross receipts tax. I just mentioned in passing that in order to provide some money, and I think this is specifically targeted to the pension fund problem, he's talking about selling some bonds. He's talking about leasing the state lottery. So there we're looking at about $26 billion there. And the gross receipts tax, and that is going to go to fund his health care program. What do you think overall about this approach to increasing revenue this way?
Well, I think it needs to be thought out and laid out more carefully. Again, some of these monies will come in once. For example, the leasing of the lottery were to happen will give us a lot of money immediately, but then we lose $600 million a year every year thereafter because we stop getting the proceeds of the lottery. And we want to make sure if we were to lease a lottery, we use those monies in a productive way, not to use them for current programs which we can't sustain in the future. So I guess my hope would be that before we start talking about program expansion and lots of new potentially good, potentially bad programs, we try to get back to zero again. We're not at zero now. We're $2 or $3 billion below that mark in a sense that our current activities are generating $3 billion more in spending than we get in terms of revenue. So I'd like to get back to a kind of even keel and then talk about in a more measured way some of these expansion that are being talked about in terms of universal health care and big increases to education funding.
Mm. I agree with Fred. I think that there's a real danger of selling an asset and having a short-term boost to the economy. And perhaps we might look to Chicago in the way that they have used the revenues from the sale of the Chicago Skyway. It's being divided. Some has gone to pay for current expenses, and others is being put into an endowment, the interest of which is going to be used to pay for activities in the city, one of which is to help underwrite a potential bid for the 2016 Olympics. Now, that I would feel a lot more comfortable. I don't like the idea of taking that revenue, making a one-time payment. Then you have no future income upon which you can draw.
Let's talk with another caller here. Let's go to Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead.
As to why Illinois isn't growing as fast as the nation, one goes to the BLS website and looks at, you know, what kinds of occupations are growing by far the fastest and projected to grow for the fastest rate way out into 2015. And it's all occupations that require bachelor's degrees or at least 2-year associate degrees or more. And Illinois has been underinvesting in education rather drastically over a long period. We're 49th out of 50th of all the states in the nation as far as the state contribution to local schools. And further, I think that this sorts out, you know, where our comparative advantage is in a globalizing world. And I wonder if you'd speak to that. And then also the revenue sources, like in Senate and House Bills 750.
You raise a very interesting question. Richard Florida, a colleague now at George Mason University, developed this notion of a creative class. And the idea was that for communities to be competitive in the future, this is the investment in the cohort that they really had to pay attention to, the occupations that did require a great deal of technical training, at least an associate degree, preferably a bachelor's degree. And together, what we could talk about this is sort of the occupational capital of a state. It's interesting that Illinois does invest very significantly in our educational system, perhaps not at the level that we write. If we're 49th, that clearly does not signal a very strong commitment. But I think the most alarming part of this is how much we lose on an annual basis as a result of net out migration. And when we look at what's happening to our state, we are losing somewhere the order of about $2 billion a year in income. In other words, the migrants that are coming into our community are, generally speaking, less well-paid than the migrants who are out-migrating. And I think that reflects in part, not completely, the fact that very skilled people are going elsewhere in search of jobs rather than staying in Illinois.
May I comment on that?
Let me make one clarification, though. The Illinois actually has some very good schools. We have some that aren't so good. And the 49 number is really misleading. That's the amount spent by the state. Illinois has a disproportionate share paid at the local level through the property tax, so our expenditures are not anything like 49th in the country. They're much higher, and many of our schools are extremely good. The fact is, though, that we have some schools that are deficient, so there are different ways of financing it, but it would be a wrong impression to suggest that we're the 49th lowest funding operation in the country.
May I comment on this?
Yes, please.
I did say the state contribution, and we are a very high property tax state. It's the state contribution that is the 49th out of 50th. And I think further, as far as out-migration is concerned, one has to also look at the in-migration. And the in-migration occurs to those areas that are more human capital intensive. There are quite a number of recent articles in the economics literature that show, you know, the migration of, for instance, people from Mississippi or from lower-income states into the higher-income states. They tend to gravitate to those places where the human capital is, where the jobs are. And so it's not fair to look at just the out-migration. One has to look at the in-migration.
And these people actually are doing exceptionally well. I mean, you think of someone who grew up in Mexico and then comes to Chicago and works at what we would consider a low-paying job. That person's had a huge increase in his or her income, and maybe less so from someone moving from the South. But so we're actually absorbing people who, as the caller suggested, who have somewhat lower skills, and they're doing well here compared to where they were, but not well compared to what other people in Illinois were doing in the past.
We're at the point here, again, I hope the caller will forgive me for jumping in because we have just about a minute. I do want to get back to the revenue issue, and in this respect, it is true that I know a couple of years ago, Fred, you talked about it even here on this show. You said, look, and this was at the time when things were really bad. You said, look, it's time that we bite the bullet, and what we need here isn't tax increase, an income tax increase. We make it temporary, make it relatively small, but we've got to bring in some more revenue. And it seems that's just something that, you know, talking about a tax increase, an income tax increase, is just about politically impossible. Is can you imagine such a thing, going through the General Assembly?
Not really. I can imagine it in some ways, but you have to think with the General Assembly pass a income tax increase, send it to the governor, have it vetoed, come back and override the veto, and then give the governor that money to spend with no political responsibility. I think the answer is no. The General Assembly is not going to give the governor a huge increase in money. So we're kind of an impasse. We're our choices are so limited because of these arbitrary things the government has chosen to do about ruling out certain things. So we're basically in a situation where the two appropriate ways to raising more money would be to expand the sales tax to include services and to have a modest increase in the income tax. Those are tried and true ways of generating money. The governor has ruled those out, so we're left with these inferior options. And I guess the General Assembly is going to have to make a choice about which direction to go. But I think it's going to be an interesting session the next 6 weeks or 2 months.
Well, we're going to have to stop here for the moment. I'm sure in the future we can get back to some of these issues. But right for the moment, we're going to have to stop with our thanks to Fred Gertz. He's professor of economics here at the U of I, and Jeffrey Hewings. He's professor of economics and also geography and urban and regional planning, both of them on the faculty of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And again, if you're interested in reading the Illinois Report 2007, came out a little bit earlier. And this was before the governor made his budget proposals. It came out a little earlier this year. Information there on the economy. You can look at it on their website of IGPA. Thank you both very much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.